there's something I love about my job, and it's this right here. If there's anything at all, this is my favorite thing. But you guys do not know the pressure I feel every single time I get up here making sure that my zipper is up. Like seriously, that's like, it is kind of like all day I've been like, okay, we're good. And then also along with that is I feel like I talk to myself like I talk to my kids by being like, have I gone to the bathroom yet? I just need to go. Because you don't want to be just about to step up here and be like, I got to go to the bathroom. And that goes along with zipping up my pants. They're zipped. I checked. But it's this whole thing of like being prepared. I do not want to make a fool of myself. And also, like, I'm talking about God here, right? So there's this, and like, I don't want to make God look dumb. And my entire ministry career, there's been this, well, I felt like this pressure on me that like, I'm going to ruin it for God. Like, I am not prepared to talk to people about God. Like, I've done this hundreds, if not thousands of times, and I still worry, like, am I going to mess this up? Like, am I going to do something that's so dumb? Now, some of you guys have been around here long enough that you've heard some of my horrible mess ups while on stage. And I'm not going to remind you of any of them, but I've said some like, why would you say that kind of thing that I regret exactly like when I say that and as soon as I do it. But for the most part, like I try as hard as I can to be as prepared as possible. And being prepared reminds me of one thing. It is fanny packs. How many of you guys wear fanny packs? No, just me. Okay, cool. I'm a sucker for a good fanny pack, and I'm going to wear a fanny pack the rest of the sermon. So if you're thinking like, take that thing off, no. I love fanny packs, and this is why. Most of the time, I don't want to depend on my wife to carry everything. Now I know that her purse is like a black hole and her arm just keeps on going farther and farther, really Mary Poppins situation. But as a man, I cannot bring myself to be like, put my wallet in your purse. I'm like, she's going to lose it. So, not like she's going to lose it. I'm never going to find it ever again. So a fanny pack is a great option for that. Keys, band-aids, you know, two coins for the boatman, whatever I need. But I want so badly to be prepared. I want you guys to be prepared. And as we're diving into this today, we're at a point inside of the story of Acts or in Acts where we have gone Acts chapter 1, we talk about it. There's a lot to learn. Acts chapter 2, we talk about it. There's a lot to learn. Acts chapter 3, Acts chapter 4. And we're getting to the end of this. And you guys are probably thinking like, when is this going to end? Are we just going to keep going chapter by chapter by chapter? No, we're not actually, because next week is the last Sunday and we still have a lot left. So I will be telling this story, and it's a story that goes for six chapters. So buckle in, because we're going to read every single, I'm just kidding. But chapter 21 through 27, it tells this story, and it shows this guy, Paul, which we've been talking about a whole lot, and you heard the story if you were here a couple weeks ago. It was that Saul, which is the same person as Paul, Saul being his Jewish name, was a Jewish man that was persecuting Christians and proud of it. And he had decrees and he had the ability. There was nothing wrong with him persecuting Christians. Now, on the other hand, he has this experience with God, which completely changes his life, where he meets Jesus. Yes, Jesus. And his life is forever changed. And we have the benefit of so many years later being like, yes, we see how Paul experienced Christ. His life was completely changed. Yay. But at the time, we have this guy named Saul, and he changes his name to Paul. Not God changes it, but he changes his name to Paul. Why? Because he is not going to just go to the Jewish people, which would say, yeah, Saul, that's a Jewish name. he's going to go to the Roman world. He's going to go to the rest of the world, the Gentile world, which is anyone who is not a Jew. And they're going to know him as Paul because he wants to connect with them. And he doesn't want there to be that barrier of it being like, oh, I'm called Saul, which makes him very, very Jewish. So they call him Paul. And that's what his name is, Paul. And we see him through his life, from his conversion, or when he meets Jesus and gives his life to Jesus, and his life is completely changed. And then we see him preaching in different places. And last week we saw him in Ephesus, and he was doing such a good job preaching that they didn't even want him to leave. They were like, please don't stop talking. Please stay with us a little while longer. But he was like, no, I've got to go to Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem being this place where Jesus was, and he died, and he was with Jewish people, and people were like, yeah, Jewish, the Jewish God, which is the true God, the living God, the God of all gods, because there's no other gods, because there's just the one, right? And this is where we're like, if you're going to be like the epicenter of Jewishness, Jerusalem is that place. There's not a more Jewish place than Jerusalem. So Paul goes there, and you would think, well, that's where Jesus was. He's probably not going to encounter any problems. But he wasn't going there to say, hey, forgive me for going to non-Jews. He was going to them being like, I'm going to keep preaching to Jews and non-Jews, people who are Gentiles and people who are Jewish. So he gets there, and everybody's been saying, oh, you're going to be imprisoned. And he's like, not only am I probably going to get imprisoned, I'm probably going to die. And I'm fine with that. I'm ready for it. And that's why we have the fanny pack. Because when we look at our lives and we look at Paul's life, I want us to see that like we've got to be prepared. We've got to be so prepared for what God is going to call us to do. And some of you are actually, no, I wouldn't say some of you. All of you are at different places in your walk with God right now. All of you. Some of you searching. Some of you just found. Some of you have been Christian since you were a baby. Some of you are on death's door and you're like, I'm about to meet Jesus. A lot of you guys are at different spots in your Christian walk. So when we look at Paul, like there may be stuff that you're like, hey, like in order to be prepared, I've got to make up for a deficit, or I've got to rein some things in, or I'm looking towards the finish line, we're at different spots. But there are four things today that I think that each and every one of us ought to carry with us everywhere that we go. And it's the things that are exhibited through Paul and what we see inside of the story. So he goes to Jerusalem. He meets up with people who are like-minded to him. And they're like, hey, you should probably go to the temple with us. And he says, yes, I'll go to the temple. So he goes to the temple. He's doing his temple things. And at the temple, they're doing very Jewish things. Well, he comes from Jewish customs and traditions. He knows all of that. There's nothing wrong with him doing that. Okay? He's not stepping back into Judaism. No, he's a Jew that is hanging out with other Jews. There's nothing wrong with it. So he goes there and he's hanging out doing the things, and there's this mob that goes into the temple, grabs him and pulls him out of the temple, slams the doors, and they start dragging him down the stairs and beating him. Okay? This went from like 0 to 90 super quick. So we've got this guy, this Paul, that is being beaten, and he's not being beaten so they're like, hey, let me show you something. Like, I'm going to teach you a lesson. Like, one punch, you're good. You learn your lesson? No. They're like, we're going to kill this guy. And it's almost like, and this is a horrible example, but you know, like dog toys? That like you step on, they're like, meow, and make that sound, okay? And it never stops. How many of you guys take the squeaker out of it super quick? Okay, I do. I'm sorry. I don't care about my dog that much. I want him to be able to chew on something, but I do not want him to annoy me forever. So it's kind of like that. Like they're like, this guy is a squeaky toy. He's not going to shut up. So let's shut him up for good. But the Roman officer, he hears about this. And Roman officers, they're just trying to bring justice. And they believe that they have the perfect justice system. So when they think that they have the perfect justice system and they see someone who is wrongfully about to die, they step in. And they're like, no. Only we can do that to people. So they take him away. They remove him from being beaten up and they take him to like a holding cell. Now, this is what I imagine because I probably watch too many TV shows that are like this. But I imagine the Roman officer sitting there just like muttering underneath his breath, speaking Greek. I mean, being like, this guy can't hear me, and being like, this idiot did something wrong, going to be killed by the Jews. I saved him. We'll put him on trial and we'll probably jail him or kill him. Okay. That's not what happened. He starts writing up his report, technically, and Paul is like, hey, can I talk to you for a second? But he speaks to him in Greek because Paul, he was so prepared to talk to people who were different from him. He wasn't about to be the most Jewish Jew of that there ever was a Jew. He's like, you know what? I'm prepared that whoever I come into contact with, like I'm going to speak their language. So what he does is he speaks to him and then he says, hey, I'd like to talk to you. The guy's freaking out. He's like, you speak Greek? And he's like, I speak Greek. And he's like, you know, this like moment, like brother moment kind of thing. And then he's like, what do you want? And he's like, Paul says, I want to speak to the people. So they open up the doors and he starts to speak and he says that he hushes the crowd. And then Acts 21:39 says this. This is what Paul says. Brothers and esteemed fathers, listen to me as I offer my defense. When they heard him speaking in their own language, the silence was even greater. Something like you blink and you'll miss it. He talked Greek to the Roman officer. He is talking Aramaic to the Jews. Why? Because he's speaking their language. Because that matters. And maybe you're called to learn someone else's language, like actually learn someone's language. One of the things that I think is really cool, these made from more bracelets. So we've got a bunch of people who are coming onto our campus, and they're doing a great job, but not all of them speak English. And we wanted to give all of these people, hey, let's give the people who are actually building this thing, these bracelets, to be like, hey, you're part of this situation. But they don't speak English. So Ian Scott, our facilities director, brilliant mind, was like, why would we give them something that's not in their own language? So we have a bunch of these bracelets that most of us wouldn't even understand. We couldn't even read. Because they speak a different language than us. And if we want to encourage them and be like, hey, you're part of something with us, we've got to speak their language. So sometimes it's actually speaking another language, but for the most part, it is looking eye to eye with people, being like, hey, I'm no better. I'm no worse than you. We are on the same level. Like, this is what we need to talk about. And God has placed you in front of people you are supposed to talk about. All down the line of like the upper echelon people, the poverty people, everywhere in between, like you are called to meet people where they are. Why? Because you have something to say to them. So, well, the first thing that we're going to pull out of here are mints. Okay, some of you probably need this. It's Sunday morning. You've been drinking lots of coffee. You're talking close to people. You're being like, "Hey, Jim, how you doing? You get that job you've been applying for?" Okay, you guys don't really talk like that. Some of you actually do because you're not from Oklahoma. But what you need is you need a mint. You need, when you talk to people, for it not to be a horrible experience for people. You're right? And we're not talking about actually putting, some of you guys actually do need a mint, but I do too sometimes. But what I'm saying is what we say to people, how we act, how we interact with people should be pleasing. And we should work hard at that. We should work hard at being people who can talk to other people and have actual conversations without looking down on them or thinking they're whatever. Sticking our nose up at other people. But it continues on because why did he speak their language? Because he wanted to tell them something. And what he tells them is he's like, hey, I am one of you. I am the most Jew of all the Jews. And I want to talk to you about something. And they all lean in. They're like, what does he have to say? So he starts talking. He's like, well, I grew up around here, just around the corner pretty much. And we're like, you know me, you know, like we were buddies. We used to play with each other on the playground. Like we're together in this. And then he hits them with the thing he really wanted to say, which was, I was persecuting Christians. And now, because of an experience that I had, like, I realized that Jesus is Lord. That I've lived my entire life trying to fulfill the law, but it's going to get me nowhere because Jesus, he came, he gave his life for me. And then he met me where I was, in my brokenness, in my pain, and he changed my life. And they're kind of okay with that. They don't turn away. It says that they continue listening until he says this. He says in verse 21, this is what Jesus tells Paul, go for I will send you far away to the Gentiles. He tells his story and then he ends it with something that's like, okay, y'all aren't going to like this, but I'm supposed to go to the Gentiles. You have all been given a story. Basically what Paul did is he pulled out his notebook or his journal and he said, well, let me tell you all the things that God has done. Like I was a Jew and then I met Jesus and I realized that the Jewish God, the God of all creation, the one true God, he sent his son and I met him. He talked to me. And he's like, I've got this story, like how I was off to kill other people, but Jesus had something in store for me. And ever since then, like I've just been trying to follow him. And he's telling this story and it makes me like ask that question, like, are you ready to tell your story? Are you prepared to tell your story? Are you working on your relationship with people in order to tell them something about your life that is powerful? It's powerful when we're able to look at our own lives and be like, this is how I was changed. And even if you were 4 years old when you gave your life to Jesus, let me give you the easiest way to tell someone about Jesus. Say, when I was 4 years, I grew up inside a church. I did not, but this is what you could say. I grew up in church. When I was 4 years old, I was like, hey, I'm afraid that if I die, I'm going to hell. So I gave my life to Jesus, and I've been a Christian since. And people are like, oh, you didn't get out of prison, or you didn't do drugs, or you were just a holy roller your entire life. Like you've done nothing bad. You say, thanks be to God that he saved me. That even when he knew the things I was going to be tempted to do, he knew that about me. He saved me. He allowed me to give my life to him that I wouldn't have to suffer the pain that some people have to go through. See, that is a powerful testimony. And we think that our story isn't good enough. No, people need to hear our story. So when we earn a seat at the table with people, we've got to share our story just like Paul shared his story. And then the story going on saying like, I'm now going to go to the Jews because Jesus told me to go to the Jews. It just, this uproar happens again, this riot. And they take him again and they're trying to kill Paul. And then the Roman officer has to take him away and put him in prison again, jail again. And this is the interesting part. Okay. The Romans could not release Paul because if they released him, then he would die from in not a just way. Like, there was no justice in how they saw it, that the Jews would kill Paul for just preaching the gospel. So they couldn't release him because the Jews would have killed them, and then that would have been a problem on their hands. But they also couldn't release him because, but they also couldn't like kill him or keep him in jail because he hadn't done anything wrong. They kept on looking at him. He kept on talking to him. And they're like, well, just tell me what you did. And Paul would say, I've done nothing. The only thing I've done is say that Christ is Lord. That's it. The only thing he was guilty of was the gospel. And he kept on telling them, the only thing I'm guilty of is the gospel. And they'd be like, well, that's not enough to keep you here. But they couldn't release him. So they were stuck. And for 2 to 3 years, he's in this holding tank. And he goes from leader to leader. And they're like, what have you done to deserve jail? And he's like, the only thing I'm guilty of is the gospel. Let me ask, would you be able to be guilty of the gospel? If someone looked at your life, would they be able to say, you're guilty of the gospel? Innocent of everything else. You ever met someone and you just have a problem with them and you don't know why? I have. I'm like, I don't know what it is about their face. But every time I look at them, I'm just like, oh, do something. Do something. Maybe y'all aren't like that. You didn't grow up in the hood like me, but the hood of Owosso, guys. Not okay. But sometimes we look at people and we don't know. That's that same feeling. They're like, I don't know what to do with you, Paul. All you've done is try to spread this gospel, of which most of them did not believe. So they're like, I don't know what to do with you. But Paul knew what God was doing. Somewhere inside of those 2 or 3 years, Paul says, or this happens in Acts 23, 11. Says, that night, the Lord appeared to Paul and said, be encouraged, because he's in jail. Be encouraged, Paul. Just as you have been a witness to me here in Jerusalem, you must preach the good news to Rome as well. Okay. Time to look inside of our fanny pack, okay? What is it that he is receiving at this very moment? What's the big deal? Like, why is that important that the Lord would come to him and be like, be encouraged? Was he that discouraged? Was he that discouraged? Thank you so much. She's a writer. She would know. Was he that discouraged? I don't know. But what I do know is that what God wanted to tell him was that he had a ticket somewhere else, that he was going to go to Rome. These are tickets to Bad Boys 2 or Bad Guys 2, not Bad Boys 2. That's a different movie. But these tickets, what do they tell me? They tell me that I can bring me and my kids to Bad Guys 2, that I can go at whatever time I get to go. But I know from purchasing these tickets, I can go to the movies and be like, here are the tickets. And they say, you can go now. Like you have bought your way into, I know that standing here, I have power to enter a movie theater. Theater 8. And I know they're going to let me in because I have tickets to prove that I'm supposed to be there. And what Paul had was for one, the world discouraging him, being like, you're just going to be in jail because we don't know what to do with you. But what Paul had was now encouragement to say, I don't care what happens, I'm going to get to Rome. And he looked around and he was in Jerusalem. So he's like, I know that I'll get to Rome. God's going to get me to Rome. And this is my ticket to get to Rome because God said so. So he's wrestling with his own feelings of like, this is a precarious situation, but knowing that God had something more for him. And God absolutely has more for each and every one of us, depending on, like, no matter where we're at in life, it's going to look different. But But he has something more for you because you are still here. And when God sees fit to say, come on home, we'll come on home. If we're Christians, that's going to be the best thing that ever happened to us. But until then, we have a job to do. And it's to connect with people. It's to tell our story well. And it's to remember what God has for us. The promise of salvation, the promise of heaven. So we've got all those things working together, but Paul is still inside of prison. So the story's not over yet. What happens eventually is Paul gets in front of the highest people he could possibly be around in that area. And they're like, what are we supposed to do with you? And I believe that Paul sees that they're like, you know what? Because they have the power to do this, they're just going to be like, just leave. Just leave. But they don't do that because they don't get the chance to do that. Because he says, I appeal to Caesar, saying, basically strong-arming them and to being like, you have to send me to Caesar because I don't want to talk to you guys. I don't want the ruling to come from you guys. No, I want Caesar himself to see me and to tell me what he wants to happen to me. So they say, you want to go to Rome? Yes. You want to see Caesar? Yeah. And there you go. So they give him a ticket to see Caesar. And they put him on this ship. And when he gets on this ship, something horrible happens. And this is where I hope I don't offend anybody inside of the room. But I have to reveal Paul's age, okay? He was not an old fart, but he was getting there, okay? He had lived some life. And that's why it's important that you know this, that he was around 60 years old. That's not old. That's not super old. But if you are 60 and you have not learned some life lessons by 60, have you been even living? Have you been living under a rock? No, by 60, you're going to have some life lessons you've learned. And one of the life lessons that Paul had obviously learned was that he knew things about ships because he had been on them a bunch. He knew what the sky would look like, and he knew, or he definitely knew, if he saw a storm coming, he wasn't going to sail into that storm. So he gets on the boat and he knows he's going to go to Rome. He knows the ship is going to take him there, but he sees a storm a-brewing and he's like, you know what? God's in control. I'm just going to mention this to the captain and the crew. And he mentions it to the captain and the crew, and they're obviously just young dudes because they're like, what do you know, old man? Sit down. Shut up. Eat your tapioca pudding. You know, just like they try to put him in this place. And they're like, you have no idea what you're talking about. So they say, you do your thing and you're a prisoner. You don't get to speak on this matter. But they sail into a storm, and for 2 weeks, the ship is torn apart. And constantly for 2 weeks, they can't even like get their head above water, like figuratively and for real. They cannot make sense of what's going on. And Paul, he remains faithful to God. We know this because they don't throw him off the ship. If he was being obnoxious, if he was being a horrible person, ruining his witness and all that good stuff, we would know that they would be like, you know what? Here's some justice. We'll just throw you into the sea. But instead, he's obviously loving on these people. And for 2 weeks, as they try to fight the storm, they can't. He eventually, 2 weeks go by, the ship is about to be torn apart. They can see it. They can see that they can't see land, but they can tell by lowering their anchor. They're like, we're getting pretty close to land. So they're like, okay, we're going to have to start throwing stuff off. And this is what happens. Paul, knowing that everybody is about to die, there's no hope for anybody. He says this. In Acts 27:33, it says, just as day was dawning, Paul urged everyone to eat. You have been so worried that you haven't touched food for 2 weeks. Let me stop there and just say that there's never been a time that a storm has been bad enough that I haven't eaten, okay? I will find food. But they were so worried about it, they couldn't even eat. He said, please eat something for now, or something now for your own good. For not a hair on your heads will perish. Then he took some bread, gave thanks to God before them all, and broke off a piece and ate it. Then everyone was encouraged and began to eat. All 276, that's a lot of people, y'all, of us who were on board. After eating, the crew lightened the ship further by throwing the cargo of wheat overboard. The only thing they had left was the wheat. And Paul, he takes this bread, he breaks it, he gives thanks. And this is what's going on. Much like us inside of our life are inside of a storm, and we can look at other people and be like, they are in a storm. Sometimes the thing for us to not do is to overtalk things. Let me try to convince you, but instead to sit back, to allow people to come to a conclusion, and to say, I'm going to remain faithful. I'm not going to kill my witness. Because then Paul is able to do something. When they realize that they've got nowhere else to go, that the ship is going down, they start tearing off all their stuff, throwing everything overboard. And it's like the junk that we have inside of our life that's like, honestly, it's not getting us anywhere. And it's definitely not winning people to Christ. Because our all of our opinions and all of our know-how and all of the things by our own strength and all of those things. And these people on the ship, they know that they are destined for death. There's nothing they can do. And 276 of them are about to die. And they know it. So they start throwing stuff off. And then Paul says, you know what? God has protected us this entire time. Yes, there's been a storm, and yes, it's been rocky, and yes, we've thought that we were going to die, but God has protected us this whole time. So let me tell you, the ship isn't going to survive this, but every single one of you will, which is incredible. What a claim. And he breaks, and this is what I think that is important, and it's going to look silly, but they needed a snack, and Paul was like, "Hey, I'm going to fulfill that." But there's something bigger going on. It's not the snack. It's not a blood sugar situation, which it definitely was. They haven't eaten in 2 weeks. Of course, their blood sugar is low. But the main point of this is that, man, like, whenever they had nothing. Nothing left. It was bread, that's disgusting. It was bread that sustained them. Right? And it says it encouraged them. They believed it. Why? Because there was power inside of that. And Jesus, he is the bread of life. That through him, people will be saved. That there are people, including people in this room, that they hunger and thirst for something that, and they don't know where to find satisfaction, and it's only found through Jesus. So taking all of these things, taking the example of Paul, and Paul was not perfect, but he served a perfect God. He is not God, but he points us towards God. And this story, it outlines, like what are we going to bring with us to live a Christian life that is holy and pleasing to God? Like, what do we need? And when it happened, when it's with other people, it's being able to speak to them well in their language. It's being able to tell your story, what God has given to you. And it's being able to clearly define, like I know God has called me to something more than this life. And then going to people, not killing your witness, but going to people and saying, you see how my life is because I have the bread of life. Because I'm fully satisfied in him. And let me say, if you need that, if you need satisfaction in your life, then God wants you to have a relationship with him. He wants you to lay down your life. Ask him to forgive you of all the wrong things you've done and look to him. But also for the majority of us, he just wants us to listen to him and do what he said to do. It's pretty simple, but it's painstaking. It takes patience and pain and strife and lots of getting it wrong. So if you've gotten it wrong, there's hope for you. Either through salvation or through just commitment to God, saying, God, I want to be like Paul. I want to be prepared. Teach me how to use my story. Teach me how to give over parts of my life that are hard. Let's pray. God, you're gracious to us. We're thankful for you. God, will you please move in this place to accomplish your will. Save those who need to be saved. Convict us that need to be convicted. Encourage us along the way. God, we give you our relationships, and our stories, our assurance, and our witness to put you first in all things. We will always give you glory. We will always give you praise forever and ever. Amen.